8 o'clock hour, Burns and Gambo show live from the Auction Community Studios. You just heard Sarah Cazell mention it in the Sports Center update a moment ago. John DeFilippo interviewed, I guess past tense, for the Cardinals OC job over the weekend,
yes,
according to reports that you had. We'll see whether he gets it or not. We know Sark's not going to get it. You reported that over the weekend as
well. No, and they never, and just so people know, they never offered Sarkisian the job. So that report by ESPN is false and it's incorrect. It's just not true. They never offered Sarkisian the job. They interviewed him, but they never offered them the job. They were interviewing, they interviewed McAdoo, and they wanted to interview DeFilippo, which they did. But any report that says they offered Steve Sarkisian the job is incorrect.
I read a story today, and it kind of dovetails into what the Cardinals are going through right now with Cliff Kingsbury being the head coach, being the basically offensive coordinator and the play caller for this team. And it was a story from ProFootballTalk.com. Here it is right here. Freddie Kitchens will continue calling the plays for the Browns.
Yes.
Todd Monken is their new OC. He was Cutter's OC in Tampa Bay. And given that there's this trend league-wide towards the offensive-minded coaches doing, you know, play calling and things like that, it does make you wonder what exactly the role of an offensive coordinator is on a staff like that.
Well,
it's a problem. It's not a problem. It's a question we have to answer here in Arizona, because this is probably how it's going to be here too.
And I was just looking at it, because with DeFilippo or any offensive coordinator that comes in here, obviously, you know that, you know, Cliff Kingsbury is going to call the plays. So, you know, when Harold Goodwin was here under Bruce Arians, he was the offensive coordinator of the Cardinals, but he wasn't calling the plays. How many teams around the league have head coaches that call the plays? And I didn't go through all of them. McVay, Sean Payton, Andy Reid, Nagy, O'Brien, Shanahan, Pat Shurmur, Jay Gruden, Peterson, Frank Reich, Freddie Kitchens. I mean, there's so many. So a lot of these offensive head coaches call the plays. So these offensive coordinators, so that limits the amount of real offensive coordinator jobs that are out there where you get to call the plays.
Right.
Because they're limited, because you're blocked by all of those guys I just mentioned. That's a lot. You know, more than a third of the league has head coaches that are calling the plays themselves. So if you want to be an offensive coordinator, you might have no choice but to take a job as an offensive coordinator with no play calling authority.
You might, but if this truly is the trend, even if you're good at whatever it is that you're responsible for, you still might be a head coach a year from now.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Zach Taylor, right? I mean, Zach Taylor he doesn't call plays for the LA Rams. He does not have that authority. That's obviously a Sean McVay deal. Zach Taylor is going to be the next head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals, according to all reports. It doesn't matter that he didn't call the plays. If Cliff, okay, let's say DeFilippo gets the job. I don't know if he's going to or not. Let's say he does, okay? And Cliff Kingsbury comes in here and he sets the world on fire with his Cardinals offense. And Rosen puts up big numbers. And Kirk puts up big numbers. And David Johnson is putting up big numbers. DeFilippo will be in demand next year. He will be in demand a year from now as a guy who is considered a quote-unquote offensive guru. And even though he didn't call plays, if he has that offensive mind that owners are looking for, it's irrelevant whether he called the plays or not. He'll get an opportunity to be a head coach in this league because he is a quote-unquote offensive genius. That's the trend.
You got to think that these 7 to 8 coaches a year getting fired, that trend's going to stop at some point. But teams will blow guys out after 1 year. I mean, you know, we had a coach fired after 1 year this year.
Sure.
After 1 year. So, I mean, all of these coaches that are getting hired, I mean, how many of them are going to last? You know, I like to go back to 2016 when Peterson got hired in Philadelphia. It was 7 coaching hires. 6 of them are fired already. You know, so you're always looking for that guy. So you are right. Comes in, does a good job. The offense improves a lot. He could get a lot of credit for that. And if he works really well with the quarterback, and say Rosen ends up really improving,
mm-hmm,
really improving, there will be a lot of most of the credit will go to Cliff, okay? Most of it. But some will go to, and obviously Kingsbury will give credit to whoever the coordinator is that's helping him.
I'll be curious to see, and you may know the answer to this, you may not. If it is DeFilippo, will they even hire a quarterback's coach? Or does the offensive coordinator under an offensive guy becomes sort of the de facto quarterback's coach? I don't know. I mean, I don't know the answer to that. They might want to hire a guy just to have another set of eyes, working with Josh Rosen. But, I mean, it's obvious what DeFilippo or Todd Monken or any of these offensive coordinators who are working for head coaches who call their own plays, it's obvious what they're there to do. They're another set of eyes. They're another brain working on plays and play calling and things like that. I mean, it's almost like to baseball what the bench coach is to the manager.
Yes.
An offensive coordinator in today's NFL, when you've got a head coach who's calling his own plays,
it's another guy to bounce ideas.
Just another guy to say, hey,
let me give you
maybe you should do this.
You know, and I saw this. Maybe you didn't see it. Let me tell you what I saw. Just give us another set of eyes. Yeah,
exactly. And that
another
is
another way to think about things.
And bench coaches, that's basically what they do. It's like another manager in the dugout just to make sure nothing gets missed, nothing, that everything gets seen and everything gets processed. And if it is DeFilippo, considering how white hot his name was a year ago, if it works, and I know that's a big if, he's a name that I would suspect a year from now becomes a very hot name in coaching circles, because I'm going to assume every year there's going to be 6-7 coaching changes every single year. Wouldn't surprise me at all. I don't think that ever slows down.
What I liked about what Michael Bidwell said when he was on our show last week is that, you know, the smart thing to do is hire the offensive guy to be your head coach,
yes,
and that way he doesn't get stolen. Because if you hire a defensive guy to be your head coach, and then you have an offensive coordinator who does a good job, well, then somebody's going to grab him from stealing from you the next year. So it's better just to have that guy as your head coach, and that way nobody can steal him.
Dave Pasch was on Bickley and Murata today, and he said, you know, in retrospect, kind of seeing how this was all shaken out, the other hires around the league, don't knock your socks off.
If you're saying it's Matt LaFleur, Zach Taylor, or Cliff Kingsbury, let's just look at that, or even Freddie. I'll put Freddie in there, who I love and I'm happy for. But, you know, Freddie got hot as the OC and the connection with Baker and the winning. He gets a head job. Matt LaFleur and Zach Taylor, the connection is Sean McVay. But, you know, LaFleur was an offensive coordinator for 1 year. It's not like Tennessee lit it up, and nobody really even knows much about Zach Taylor other than he played in Nebraska.
By comparison to those guys, the voice of the Cardinal says the Kingsbury hire doesn't look that bad at all.
I'm going to reserve judgment, obviously, until the whole staff is put together until next year, because I think I jumped the gun, maybe like Dan did last year. But it makes sense when you compare it with some of the other hires in the NFL. If it's just this one hire, and it was the only coaching opening in the NFL this year, I think it would look more strange. But it does, it's easy to put the pieces together once you kind of think about the other options.
Yeah, relative to everything else, the Cliff Kingsbury hire compared to the Zach Taylor hire, compared to the Matt LaFleur,
compared to the Freddie Kitchens,
is it really that crazy what the Cardinals have gone and done? Yeah, it is a little, but not as much. When you look at the relative inexperience of those other guys, yeah, they all have NFL experience. They've all been in the league, but they're not calling their own plays. They're not, you know, offensive coordinators with years and years and years of experience. Their level of experience isn't that different from Cliff Kingsbury. It's different, but it's not that different.
I understand that. I mean, I still like LaFleur and Kitchens, and these guys have been in the NFL, they've called plays, and then the thing with Cliff is the lack of NFL experience. Like, he hasn't been in the NFL as a coach.
Yeah.
He has had coaching experience, but just in college, where some of these other guys have, and Zach Taylor's been a quarterback coach. And so those guys can point directly to NFL experience to where Cliff can.
Sarah on our Burns and Gambo Twitter account, at Burns and Gambo,
yes,
is going to tweet out, if she would be so kind, some video of Adam Gase's introductory press conference today in New York. It was odd, to say the least.
I didn't see it.
Have you seen the pit?
I saw like a couple of photos.
Okay.
I'd like to watch the whole thing.
He's doing this crazy weird thing with his eyes.
I just want to start off thanking Christopher Johnson, Mike Maccagnan, the rest of the Jets organization. I know it was a long process for you guys. A lot of candidates. I know there was a lot of tireless nights.
I love working in radio. This is a moment where radio does a little disservice to this, because that sounded perfectly normal and perfectly fine. His eyes are like crazy
eyes,
darting all over the room, looking up, looking down, looking left, looking right. I mean, he can't hold his eyeballs still for even a half second. It is the oddest thing, Jordan.
It's led to some reporters even going out and saying that there was no medical issue with him because people were wondering if there was something actually medically
wrong with
him. So
people who were watching the press conference were wondering if he was having some sort of like an anxiety attack or a panic attack.
If he had some sort of medical condition or something like that.
Valid Jets reporters are tweeting out,
this was no medical thing. This was basically nerves.
I'm just trying to think what causes crazy eyes. I'm looking at it right now. What causes?
I mean, I've had my fair share of panic attacks before, like anxiety attacks. I mean, he might have been having one. I don't know if that's, they're all different. Everybody has them different. Maybe that's what he does when he has one. But it was odd to watch. I mean, I'm sure you're looking at some of the video right now, some of the pictures.
Lazy eye? Is it a lazy eye?
No, it wasn't a lazy eye. It was the
opposite.
The exact polar opposite of a lazy eye. It was a hyperactive eye.
Hyperactive.
Flying all over the place.
Crazy eyes.
It was strange. Strange.
Private eyes? Were they private eyes watching you?
No.
They see your every move?
But I do want to thank you for the Hall & Oates. Right? Did you take your wife to Sticks this weekend, by the way?
I got caught working on the Cardinals stuff all weekend.
That's right. Your wife was like, thank God, he had to work on weekend because he was going to drag me to Sticks.
All of this Cardinal stuff started to come down Saturday, and I got stuck working.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the matchup that some predicted, it is here. Patriots-Chiefs AFC Championship game. We'll look back at the AFC playoffs this past weekend next on the Burns and Gambo show. Combined score of the AFC divisional round playoff games this weekend, 72-41. And it felt like it, too. It was just all you had to do.
The New England game was the worst. Like, I literally didn't watch the second half.
I don't think, did you have to watch the second half of the Colts-Chiefs game either?
No.
I mean, the Colts had nothing.
Nope.
Nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, both of those games were over by halftime.
Yes, both games.
Hearing Jim Nance and Tony Romo try to convince viewers to hang around for the second half of the Patriots-Chargers game was amusing.
It
was time to go see what else was on TV while we were waiting for Eagles-Saints to start.
I don't know what the hell happened to the Chargers. That all 9-0 outside of Los Angeles. It's Tom Brady. It's Bill Belichick. It's a bye week. It's death.
Yeah,
it just is. The Patriots have won 16 straight home games. They're the only team that has not lost at home. And when you look at the numbers, and this is why I wouldn't make the bet with you, because while my head and my heart said, God, I really like this Chargers team this year, there was a part of my body said that you'd be making a big mistake if you picked against the Patriots. Brady's 20-3 at home in playoff games, 20 wins and 3 losses. In the divisional round, he's 12-1. I mean, he's now 8-0 against Rivers.
Right.
I mean, honestly, like every single number that you would crunch would show you that the Patriots were going to win that game. The only reason people could have even thought the Chargers would win it would just be like a gut feeling, like, maybe there's something about this team. But when you just look at the numbers, Brady's numbers against Rivers, Brady's numbers at home, Belichick's numbers at home, the Patriots' numbers at home, all of that stuff just led to the Patriots should win this football game. And they did. But they won it so convincingly. They just buried them. They buried them. And the game was over. I mean, and it might have been over earlier. But when the Chargers guy muffed the punt.
Desmond King.
When he muffed the punt and then New England recovered it. And initially I wasn't sure if they recovered. Then they showed the replay. I'm like, oh, God, New England's got the ball. And then they punched in. It was over right then and there. That game was over. There was no reason to watch anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the Chargers put up a little bit of a fight early with that 43-yard touchdown pass to Keenan Allen, and I thought maybe things were going to be different, but they just couldn't keep up. I mean, Tom Brady was a man possessed. They ran like a team possessed. Sony Michel had a tremendous game. James White had 15 catches. Edelman had a huge game. The offense, and you're right. At home, they play so much better, which is, and we'll talk more about this over the course of the week, which what makes this Sunday so intriguing between Kansas City and New England, in that New England has to go on the road. And if you look at their success on the road in the playoffs, it gets a little dicey in these moments for them. The last two AFC title games they've had to play on the road, they lost both of them. Now it's to Peyton in Denver. The weather's going to be...
Okay, go. I was just going to say, go over that, because you're missing though. And you told me, I didn't even know. The storyline for this game is going to be the weather.
Adam Schefter tweeted out, National Weather Service is projecting an Arctic blast to settle over Kansas City for Sunday's AFC Championship game against the Patriots.
An Arctic blast.
Temperatures at kickoff could range from 10 degrees to well below zero, making it the coldest game in Arrowhead Stadium history.
Wow. In the history of that stadium, the coldest game.
I have a question, and I realize these things are set and probably changes can't be made, and it maybe wouldn't even make that big of a difference. That's supposed to be the second game, and that's a night game. You need to switch them.
I agree. You're 100% right.
And it's so much easier said than done. I understand that. If there's any way switch those games, you have to switch those games.
So the Kansas City game is when the sun like might at least be up?
The Kansas City game would be, I think, at like 2 or 3 o'clock local time, Kansas City.
Which I'm sure it's warmer at 2 than it is at 6.
As opposed to the night game. I mean, right now it is the night game. I know it's not that easy to just, I'll just switch them. No big deal. I understand that. The NFL needs to look at switching them.
What's the difference in temperature? Like, is it a big difference from 2 o'clock in the afternoon to 6 o'clock at night?
At night, it's when the sun goes down, it's gonna drop to potentially well below freezing, I would think, you know, as opposed to when the sun is up. I mean, it could still be freezing.
How often or how late out do they announce the flexed games? Because in terms of how difficult would it be to change the time, a week out or 6 days out
should be enough.
I agree. I think that's enough time.
Should be enough. Listen, we're changing the game time. I mean, you got to be an idiot if you're going to show up like late. I mean, I'm a fan. Hey, I thought it was this time. It said on my ticket. Yeah, we change the game.
Yeah,
I just don't want, you know, blast it everywhere.
You just don't want it to be dangerous or anything.
It's just cold.
It's just really.
This isn't the '60s. They actually got heaters on the sidelines. It's terrible for the fan. It's worse for the fans.
Yeah, it's brutal.
I was at a Big 12 championship game with the Fiesta Bowl.
At Arrowhead. I've been to one of those too. It was a little cold.
I was dying.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to die. It was so, and then right behind me, like I was in the last row, and then right behind me is Warren Moon in a suite, like, you know, with his jacket off and his, I'm like, I'm literally 5 feet from you and you're warm and I'm dying here. We were 5 feet away from each other.
I don't want to brag, but when I got to go on that Fiesta Bowl trip,
yeah,
I was in that suite.
You were in the suite?
I was in Lamar Hunt's suite watching the Big 12 championship game.
Wow.
Sorry, I just...
That's good.
I had blankets and hot chocolate and...
You did, huh?
Bailey's in the hot chocolate, and anytime I got cold, I could go in the back and...
Gambo, yeah. They just think Burns is soft and that's...
Oh, good for you!
Burnsy the bragger!
Really?
Oh, Burnsy the bragger.
That Christian Bale soundbite that Jordan just played a second ago. I think that's the first time in the history of the Burns and Gambo show you've ever played it for me, right?
Hot chocolate in the suite while I was freezing my ass off.
That's always the Gambo soundbite when he's bragging about something he's done or someplace he's gone. You never play that for me.
Just to your question on the weather, it looks like the high is going to happen around 4 or 3 o'clock, and it's going to be a 14-degree high.
Okay, that's better than minus something.
Better than minus something.
How many players are we still going to see warming up? No shirts, no pads, jerseys.
You'll see more fans with no shirts on. You'll see that guy, that idiot that shows up to the game with no shirt on. Look, I can brave the cold! Yeah!
It's scheduled to be a 4:40 kickoff here in Arizona, which would make it, 5:40 there? Yeah, 5:40 in Kansas City. Switch them. Switch them. If you can switch them, switch them.
Whatever makes the Patriots lose, I hate that. Julian Edelman, God, here's the thing about the Patriots, and I just want to say this.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's one thing I've never understood. How is every single wide receiver so wide open that nobody's around them? I mean, I honestly want to know. I mean, have you not been playing Bill Belichick for like 100 years? How is Julian Edelman wide open on every single play?
Great question.
Julian Edelman catches the ball, and you can literally go 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, 3 Mississippi before some idiot defender gets in the picture. He's Julian Edelman. How is he that wide open? I don't know. I don't get it. He's not running fly patterns. I mean, I just don't understand. Dorsett. Did you see how wide open Dorsett was?
Yes, I did.
That's
wide
not
open.
Tony Dorsett. It's another Dorsett. How's that guy? I don't understand how all their players are so wide open on every single play.
Say what you want about him. Say what you want about them. They've gone to 8 straight AFC Championship games. In the 17 seasons that Tom Brady has been mostly healthy, they've gone to the AFC Championship game 13 out of the 17 times.
I know, I hate them. They've had 9 straight first round byes. 9 straight first round byes. Because nobody in that division can win.
Yeah.
They've won 10 straight division titles. I still don't understand how every single wide receiver is wide open. It's just like nobody covers anybody on that team.
Yeah. And oh, by the way, the Chiefs beat the Colts 31-13. There was not much to say about that game. It was a total blowout in the first half. Andrew Luck could not do anything against that Chiefs defense.
No.
The 31st ranked defense in the league, by the way. But he couldn't do anything against them.
They're a good defense at home.
Yes, they are. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, coaching news to tease about the Arizona Cardinals. Perhaps a decision made at yet another position. We'll bring you the latest on that. Plus, Larry Fitzgerald, is he any closer to deciding his future? We'll talk about that coming up on this Monday edition of the Burns and Gambo show. So we are starting to check some boxes when it comes to the Cardinals coaching staff. Defensive coordinator, offensive line coach, and Kugler. Sarah just mentioned that a moment ago. There is a report from the NFL Network that new Cardinals head coach Cliff Kingsbury got one of the best running back coach to tutor his running backs, former Steelers running backs coach James Saxon, for David Johnson and Chase Edmonds. And as the NFL Network points out, Kingsbury does like to run the ball. His teams averaged about 132 rushing yards per game last year at Texas Tech. Saxon was let go by the Pittsburgh Steelers and Mike Tomlin after he cleared out some of his coaches when the season was done. He used to be the Vikings running backs coach, where he coached Adrian Peterson. With Saxon, the Steelers ranked 16th in rushing in 2014, 16th in 2015, 14th in 2016, but the last 2 years they've dropped to 20th and 31st in the league.
18 years as an NFL running backs coach, has helped his backs reach the Pro Bowl 14 times, has had a running back go over 1,000 yards 11 times he's had that happen. So he's got a pretty good history, pretty good track record. I think he's like 52 years old, I believe. So another hire, a guy with experience and coming from the Pittsburgh family as well. But yeah, the Steelers parted ways with him on January 7th. So Mike Tomlin announced that they weren't bringing him back, so he became available. And so the Cardinals grabbed him. Tough to put a staff together. And I will say this. Thank God the Cardinals made their hire when they did. Like, I feel bad for Cincinnati and Miami, because by the time they get to putting a staff together, it's like, who's left? Like, honestly, like, who's left?
Yeah.
You're waiting to hire your guy in Cincy and Miami while everybody else is filling their staffs? Like, what? The pickings are going to be slim.
From the position coaches, yes. The coordinator spots, it's going to be difficult. Now, the two guys both won this weekend. Flores in Miami and Zach Taylor in Cincinnati. If those are indeed the hirings that are going to happen, they're going to have to wait at least another week before they can announce that they've been hired, which is, now those guys can work behind the scenes to fill the staff, but again, it's all very tenuous. And as we saw last year with the Colts and the Patriots, there's no guarantee that if the Patriots win the Super Bowl, Brian Flores doesn't change his mind. Then what do you do if you're Miami? Or if the Rams win the Super Bowl, Zach Taylor doesn't change his mind and decide to stay with Sean McVay in L.A., then what do you do?
I mean,
that happened last year.
Well, because Josh McDaniels, who called a hell of a game for the Patriots the other day. Wow. That was a great game that he called. Yes, every single one of his receivers was wide open. You go to your next guy. If you hire that guy, like, if I'm that guy, I'm a little worried. Like, if I'm Zach Taylor right now, I'm trying to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But I'm also trying to put a staff together, and I'm watching all these other guys get like who's going to be left for me to hire?
But to your point, the hard part with that is, like, a guy like Josh McDaniels, he had already kind of lined up some guys who are going to be coaches on his staff.
Yeah.
When he changes his mind, those guys are left blown in the wind. I mean, they're gone. You're not getting those unless you decide to hire those guys anyway and force the new coach that you're going to hire to take on the guys that McDaniels wanted to hire. It's a risky proposition if you're the Bengals and the Dolphins,
right? Like, you're not going to poach. You're not going to be able to take guys from the Rams staff.
Yeah,
McVay's not going to let you.
Yeah, no.
So if you're Zach Taylor, hey, I'm leaving. You're not going to be able to go get guys from the Rams.
We'll see what happens on that front. On the Larry Fitzgerald front, yesterday he made an appearance on Sirius XM Radio and confirmed that if he plays, he only wants to play right here.
Yeah, I mean, I really, you know, enjoy playing in Arizona. You know, aside from the record, you know, the way management is, Steve Keim and Michael Bidwell and just the state of Arizona, I mean, they've always been good to me. I'm a loyal cat, and, you know, my feelings on that haven't really changed.
I'm a loyal cat, says Larry Fitzgerald.
I think Ken Summers or somebody tweeted this out. Like, this is why is this even a story? Because he was on a radio station. He's not going to tell anybody anything. We know he's never. I mean, is that a surprise to us that Larry's saying he's not going to play for anybody else besides the Cardinals? No, we've always known that. We've always known he's never going to play anywhere.
Don't you think
else.
There are some fans who don't?
No, I don't.
I do.
No, I don't.
Some fans who don't believe that, aren't scared that he might change his mind and decide he wants to go play for somebody else, because I think some fans out there believe that. Just like there are some fans out there who believe the Cardinals owed it to Larry Fitzgerald to trade him somewhere where he could go win a Super Bowl. I know they exist.
But we've heard Larry
I hear
say
from
this,
them every year.
We've heard Larry say this over and over again. I'm not playing anywhere else. We've heard him say it a lot.
I understand it, but no matter how many times he says that, every trade deadline, I get him and you get him too. Suggestions from fans who say the Cardinals owe it to Larry Fitzgerald to trade him somewhere where he has a chance to win a Super Bowl, even though he stated time and time again, this is the only place I want to be. Those fans out there exist. Whether they should or shouldn't, I agree. There's no reason anymore to believe that Larry Fitzgerald wants to be anywhere else, but I still think there's a small segment of fans out there who believe that in his heart he wants to go win somewhere, or he deserves the opportunity to go win somewhere. He wants to be here.
Look, I don't know anything. Guy, I reading the tea leaves, my vibe is he comes back and plays. He might retire, I don't know. I hope he comes back and plays. I mean, who doesn't like watching him play?
Oh, of
I mean,
course.
I hope he comes back and plays another year.
Still good at what he does.
I wouldn't be surprised if he worked it out to where he can miss some of that off-season conditioning and a weight program and stuff like that. I wouldn't be surprised with that.
Now, on the Antonio Brown front, let's talk about that a little bit. Lewis Riddick from ESPN on Friday says he believes AB is going to be on somebody else's team next
year. When the owner comes out and then, you know, and people start talking about things as far as individual players are concerned and what their futures are going to look like on that football team, when the Steelers do that, you can tell it's a big deal. It's a big situation. It's something that that really has run its course, and there's really not much else to say about it. I think you will see AB on a different team, and that'll be that, and they'll move on.
Hall of Famer Jerry Rice said today during a radio interview when asked if he believes that Antonio Brown wants to play for the 49ers, Rice answered, quote, yeah, 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 yeah. He wants to come here really bad.
Wow.
Four yes from the greatest wide receiver of all time.
Yeah.
And a fifth yeah from Campo.
Yeah. Okay, so another yeah. Antonio Brown is a really good player. Here's the thing I would worry about trading for Antonio Brown. He's going to be 31 years old by the time next season starts.
Yes.
31.
Yes.
Like, it's not like he's a spring chicken here. I mean, if the Cardinals could get Antonio Brown and not have to give up anything outrageous, I would be all for it. But what would they want for Antonio Brown? You know, Sporting News did a story on, like, where's he going to play next year? Like, I think I read a story that he already took off, like, Steelers from his, like, bio, you know, on Twitter or whatever. Like, he doesn't mention he plays for the Steelers anymore. But the Broncos are a possibility. He's going to play somewhere.
Sure.
So good of a player. But the belief is that, you know, that he could go to the Broncos, the Colts, the Jets, and it does mention the Cardinals. Brown to Arizona and Patrick Peterson to Pittsburgh. This was brought up. Like, this is insanity.
Yeah,
the veteran cornerback reportedly asked Arizona to trade him back in October. Steelers could be a good fit. Arizona could use a receiver to support Rosen if Fitzgerald retires. Like, no, I'm not trading the best cornerback in the NFL for a you know, for a 31-year-old, but really good Antonio Brown. I'm not doing it.
And neither am I. Jordan was mentioning a story on AZ Central that kind of compiled all the rumors about Antonio Brown, and a lot of the big websites mentioned the Cardinals as a possible destination. And yes, a couple of them mentioned Patrick Peterson. And no, there's no way on earth I'm trading Patrick Peterson for Antonio Brown. The NFL.com story I looked at, Ian Rappaport over the weekend, Gambo, suggested that they believe they could get a second rounder, maybe a second and a third rounder for Antonio Brown. If I'm the Cardinals,
would you do that?
I only do it if I have a spare second and third rounder. And that only comes from making a big trade on draft day to get an extra second or third rounder. It's the only way I'm doing it. I'm not trading the only second and third rounders I have for Antonio Brown. I'm only doing it if I have spares.
Jordan, you give up a second round and a third rounder for Antonio Brown? I'm going to say
yeah, I would.
I'm going to say I don't do it.
Only if I have extras. If I don't have extras, I don't do it. But to get extras, I have to move around in the draft, right?
Give up a second and a third rounder for a 31-year-old guy. Oh, man. This is hard. Like this, that's a difficult decision. He's great.
3 years left on his deal, puts up unbelievable numbers. He's a huge pain in the butt to deal with. A wide receiver room with Antonio Brown, Larry Fitzgerald, and Christian Kirk, with Cliff Kingsbury calling the plays and David Johnson in the backfield.
It's
enticing.
I'm at least thinking about it. Okay, I'm not on the definitely no.
Okay,
but I'm on the man. I don't know. Like I'm thinking about.
Okay,
it. I'd have to think about it.
Okay. Fair enough. Tomorrow is ticket window. don't sound so fatigued by it. We're not asking you to cure any diseases or anything.
I know.
It's just the big heavy sigh.
It's just a tough question.
Okay, relax.
I mean, second and third rounders are guys that could be in your system if you get it right for 10, 12 years.
Or it could be Chad Williams or Brandon Williams.
I know, that's the other part.
Yeah, exactly. Tomorrow is Ticket Window Tuesday, presented by Arizona Central Credit Union, giving you the chance to win a pair of two-day general admission tickets to the Innings Festival, where you're going to see Eddie Vedder, Incubus, Jimmy Eat World, and more at Tempe Beach Park on March 2nd and 3rd. Listen tomorrow at 7:15 a.m., 10:15 a.m., 12:15 p.m., and in the afternoon at 4:15 to win. Why is the NFL in love with the offensive trend in their coaching hires? Just look at the four teams that are left in the playoffs. That's all you need to know. That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. John Gambadoro, Dave Burns with the Burns and Gambo Show on this Monday, live from the Auction Community Studios, the day after the divisional round of the playoffs, the final four in the NFL is set. Gambo and I talked on Friday about this potential backlash if the Rams lost, right? It'd be back-to-back one-and-dones for Sean McVay, and maybe people around the league would wonder if the trend to go try to find the next Sean McVay, a trend that the Cardinals obviously took place in by hiring Kingsbury, if people would kind of second-guess that, question that, wonder about the logic behind that. Instead, Gambo, the exact opposite happened this weekend in the NFL playoffs. The four top scoring teams in the league all advanced.
One. Yeah.
Which
offenses advanced.
Which really, in some ways, validates at least the philosophy behind the
division.
Although
the New Orleans game, Thomas played great, and Kamara and Breeze, but they had a fake punt on fourth down to go get some points, and a fourth and two.
Yeah, they weren't scoring wild. No, I'll give you that.
Yeah, they weren't going crazy scoring-wise. But, I mean, listen, it is... You know, I still will always believe that you're going to need to run the ball and play good defense to win, you know, to win. But there is a lot of good offenses in this league right now. And I don't know that the defensive coordinators, for the most part, have been able to catch up. And I think the rule changes have really hampered the defensive players. You know, they can't hit these guys and they can't touch these guys and they can't grab them and they can't. So there's so many rules that benefit the offensive player over the defensive player. And I don't even know the coaching can adjust to that. I think that's just the rules. The rules were put in place to give the offenses more of an advantage, and the defenses can't do anything about it.
I think there's something else at play here, too. It's okay. We agree. And if you watch these games this weekend, I mean, Kansas City's defense did a number on the Colts.
Yes.
That was a big reason why they won. The Saints, as you mentioned, offensively didn't set the world on fire with how they played. But by being the four highest scoring teams in the league this year, these were all ones and twos who have advanced, right?
Yeah.
So
Every team with a home bye won.
Right.
Every team that had a home bye won.
You earn that home bye by being great during the regular season. You're great during the regular season because you can put up a boatload of points.
Right, totally.
You might not be able to put up a boatload of points in the playoffs, by putting up a boatload of points in the regular season allows you to be the one or the two, so you don't have to leave, so you can play at home, so you can have that benefit. That's where the benefit of being one of the highest scoring teams in the league is.
That's why the upsets occur in the first round. That's why you can get upsets in the first round, because nobody's got a bye and nobody has an advantage and nobody has extra time to prepare or extra time to get healed up. But when you've got to do all this traveling and stuff, like these teams that have to travel, you know, so where did the Chargers played the first game
in Baltimore.
So they had to go to Baltimore, play in Baltimore, go back to the L.A., and then go back out into New England. It's too much.
Yeah.
It's too much. And it has a factor in it. So there's an advantage for the second round. You're home, and then there are still upsets, but for the most part, it is a big advantage to be home coming off the bye.
Yeah, so the trend that I was thinking maybe we'd be talking about today, instead it's the exact opposite of the trend. It's the top four scoring teams in the league. It's all ones, all twos, advancing to the conference championships. It's straight chalk across the board. We'll preview the matchups when we get a little closer to the matchups, obviously. They're both rematches of games that we saw during the regular season. Two of the best regular season games that we saw this year in the NFL. The Saints-Rams game was fantastic. The Chiefs-Patriots game in Week 6 on Sunday Night Football was a great, great game. If either one of these can even come close to duplicating that, we're in for a great Sunday of football to see who gets the Super Bowl. And we'll see if either of the road teams can prevail. I don't know if either one of them are going to this weekend.
I would give the greatest advantage to just New England. Because of Brady and Belichick, and, you know, Mahomes is young. And I would think that New Orleans, I mean, at home, I was looking at some of the numbers on New Orleans. We talk about Brady and his numbers at home and Brady's numbers against Rivers. Well, I mean, Breeze's numbers in these games at home are just fantastic. I mean, he's got 6 straight wins at the Superdome in the playoffs. So they have a big advantage there. I think it's more difficult for the Rams to go to New Orleans and win than it would be for New England to go to Kansas City and win.
The Kyler Murray story, we haven't talked about it much yet today. He has officially entered his name into the NFL draft. He announced his decision on Twitter today. He has now given himself the option to choose the NFL over Major League Baseball. He actually submitted the paperwork on Friday, but he announced it today. Now, this comes in the midst of a story that was broken earlier this morning about how far the A's in Major League Baseball are willing to go to keep Kyler Murray in baseball.
They could put him on a 40-man roster and start his clock, and then they could pay him double the money or triple, go $10 million, $12 million, $15 million, whatever it is. But it would start his clock. Like, it would start his baseball clock, so where they've got, you know, four years or so before he could be, like, arbitration eligible and things like that, because he'd be on the 40-man roster.
It's fat. Do you think baseball is making a mistake by drawing a line in the sand and starting a financial fight over Kyler Murray? Is he that important to Major League Baseball not to lose him to the NFL, and it's worth doing crazy financial things just to keep him around for?
I mean, I don't know.
I don't know either.
What this should honestly come down to is, what does the kid want to do?
Mm-hmm.
What makes you happier? What do you want to do? Like, what do you like? You're going to get money either way,
right?
Okay, like, you're going to have millions of dollars either way. Now, obviously, one decision may lead you to a lot more money than the other one, but I would just say, what's going to make you happy? What, like, are you going to regret it if you play baseball? Are you going to regret that you didn't play football? Or, now, what I would say too, like, if you do choose football and it doesn't work out after 2 years, you could easily go play baseball. Look at, like, Tim Tebow. Like, you could go play baseball.
Could. Yeah, you could.
You'll still be young. You could do it. If you go play baseball for a few years, I think it'd be harder to come back and play football.
Pro Football Hall of Famer Deion Sanders, who obviously did both, knows exactly what he would do if he were Kyler Murray.
Oh, I'd love to hear it. I have no idea what he said.
Quote, "If I was in his shoes, I'm picking up the baseball bat and I am not looking back." Close quote.
Deion said that.
Deion said,
"Wow,
baseball."
Why? Did not he say football. Why?
He didn't say. I the quote I have is just that. I'm picking up the baseball bat, and I'm not looking back. So now that he's...
Everybody's trying to give this kid advice. Listen, do what you want. Do what makes you happy. What makes you happy? Because in about like life, honestly, do stuff that make you happy. If everybody, what some, one of those sports makes him happier than the other, right?
There's a 30 for 30. Jordan was just telling me a second ago, there's a 30 for 30 coming out about Deion Sanders and the baseball and football and how
it's specifically
to
about how he played two baseball games with a football game sandwiched in between.
Falcons and the Braves.
It's gone so far, Gambo, that the assistants, the media relations contact for Oklahoma football, his name is Mike Hauk, I hope I'm saying his name right, tweeted this out about 15 minutes ago. I keep hearing TV talking heads question the 5'10" height at which we list Kyler. Have even heard a couple say they think he's more like 5'8".
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Before the season, our strength staff measured him at 5'9", 7 1/8 inches in socks.
I'm taller than that, just barefoot.
Well, you're
not in socks.
You're tall.
Where's my millions, you know?
Well, can you throw a ball that far? Can you run around in the pocket like that? Can you hit a baseball 400 feet? Can you do any of that stuff?
Like at a 20th of his capacity.
You speak probably well on the radio. Oh. I mean, you know, that's you got that going for you. I'm just pointing that out because I guess on ESPN, they've been talking about this all day. He's 5'8". He's 5'8". He goes, nope. In socks, we measured him 5'9 7/8". He's an eighth of an inch shorter than 5'10".
The wild reports that he's 5'8".
I
there's so many reports that he's 5'8".
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's people.
5'10" is like now you're Russell Wilson tall.
Maybe
right?
It's people standing next to him and looking at him and saying, "There's no way you're 5'10". There's no way you're 5'10". I've stood next to. It could be someone as simple as saying, "I've stood next to Kyler Murray. There's no way he's 5'10".
Well, we'll know. Listen, when they measure him at the combine, we'll know exactly how tall he is.
Yeah.
So if this guy's wrong, it's going to come out.
The Arizona Cardinals still missing an offensive coordinator. How close are they to making a hire? We're going to give you the latest information as we know it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.